This is Mae Moran, the 14th of May, 1997, tape 2 with Charles Murray, otherwise known as Murph, who just keeps telling me wonderful stories. Keep going.
I'm trying to think of some more. One night, about 4 o'clock in the morning, I was coming down Washington Street. Two fraternities there. I kept hearing glass break. So I just went on down the street and turned around and come in, parked in the parking lot in between them. Guy with a flashlight, and I think at first they thought it was the police. And so I got the sign of the flashlight around, the windows all broke out on one side of the house and down there. And the boy come out of the turn of the house and says, "Is that you, Murph?" I said, "Yep." He says, "Oh, hell." I said, "This stuff's got to stop." He says, "Okay, just stop right now." I said, "You guys are turning up too much stuff around here." So they quit.
Why do you think they do that?
I don't just... They just didn't care anything about those houses because they wouldn't. They messed up, and this one of those houses over every summer. So I used to watch all fraternity houses before the school took them over and make sure they weren't broken into. There's one fraternity house I go in over there, and I'm telling you, the roaches with this all over the place. So I'd get the Orkin man in there and he'd spray and put out these smelly bombs. I go back the next day and I've gotten up as many as 2 dishpans full of roaches as the floor. And one boy told me one day, I knew him real well, he moved out of this fraternity house. I asked him, I said, "What'd you move out for?" He's like, "I started waking up every morning with the roaches in bed with me." So that's been eliminated now with all this renovation.
So you were still around during the fraternity renaissance?
Yeah. They'd finished quite a few of them. Let me see, I believe the SAE was finished, and the Sigma Nu, Phi the Alpha Beta, and Pica, and Phi Kappa. And of course, they didn't have to do much to the Sigma, up to the Phi Gamma house, because it was already been fixed up after it burnt. And most of them were finished before I left.
So, could you tell? Did you know that it was going to be such a big transition?
No. I knew once the school did spend all that money and took over the fraternity house, there's going to be a lot of changes made. I knew that from the experience I had with the Phi Psi and the SAE at that time. I knew it was going to be a big change. Be tighter. They tried to stop having all these kegs around these fraternity houses, but now they got more control over it. So me and now can go in and take them. Otherwise, before the school took them over, you couldn't do that because it's reported to the nationals. You know, they're not going to do too much if they can help it. So they got them where it bothers them now if they do anything wrong.
And I hear they're going to try to eliminate alcohol entirely from some of the houses.
They have it to Phi Delta, I think. I heard that.
Mm-hmm. And Sigma Nu, they're telling them in 3 years or something. That...
Well, I think they've been working. It started out with the Phi Delta, really, according to the ranking Phi and stuff like that. I've been reading it.
What do you think's going to happen?
Well, they just go somewhere else. They want to drink. what, 9 times out of 10, they'd be way out in the country somewhere, and they all get drunk, and that's when you're gonna start having a bunch of people killed.
So you think it's safer to have it going on here in town?
If they live in a turned house or anything like that, or live close to a turned house where they can walk to their apartments, it'd probably be better. But if they start taking them out in the country, somebody's gonna get hurt. This school's always been known for a drinking school. You know that.
It has a reputation.
I know it does.
Did you ever get involved in talking to, say, security or administrations at the women's schools when something would happen, when things would, they'd get upset about something?
No, because I never had any problems for me to go to them about it. Problems with that, because at night time, when I was there, every night I was out pretty close around where these girls were all the time.
And how about the opening of the student pavilion? Did that make a difference to things?
The partying over there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we tried to control the drinking up there, but we never could. You get these students to help you, and first thing you know, they're bringing in the side doors on you somehow. But you try to control it, but it's impossible sometimes. We stood at that door and checked them. Practice patted the girls and the boy come in there trying to find booze. And I was standing there one night, and this boy come by, and I could see the top of the bottle sticking in. It's cold weather. I could see the top of the bottle sticking up as far as his pocket. He walked by, and I just reached out like it and pulled it out real easy. He didn't know I had it. I guess he got to looking for his whiskey when he got inside and he didn't have any.
Well, last year at homecoming, I was just amazed at how many people just were very blatant about having flasks with them.
Oh, yeah. I never could see any point in all that drinking. I'm not a drinking man myself. Yeah. I never could see any point in all that drinking.
I don't understand what they get out of it.
Most of them don't realize what they're doing to their bodies. Well, I tell you, I've seen some of these girls as drunk as boys. Then they wonder why they get harassed and molested. And then they get all drunk on what they're doing. I've seen that quite a bit.
What about the guys who don't get involved in fraternities? Are they more or less likely to be a problem? Is there a distinction there?
No, when I was there, most of the time, if they had parties, if they're non-fraternity, they kind of let them in. Then, as long as they didn't bother anything, bother anybody, they were pretty nice about it. I remember one night over at the certain fraternity, was having this party. And, 3:30 in the morning, and it happened a little earlier. There's a couple of cadets in there, and some student was pretty well licking up. Didn't want them in there, so he beat up one of them pretty good. And about 3:30, I was coming back down the street. I saw this police officer standing in the street. And, what's the matter? He said, I'm just looking around. But at that time, we heard something. Looked up, and there was about 300 and some cadets coming up the street. And you know, some of them had tape all around their hands, and this, that, and the other. And I just sat down in the car. They didn't pay attention to me. I sat down in the car. I knew what was up. So the police officer got on the radio and says, call that VMI and see what these young cadets are up to. I said, I can tell you what they're up to. He said, what? I said, they're going right up there. And that's where they went. Up at that fraternity house. And I was teasing one of the guys doing a reunion about having to get him off of a cadet. He had down the porch beating him, and I pulled him off, and he looked up and he saw it was. He thought it was another cadet, and he saw it was. He said, what you, Murph? I said, yeah, quit this foolishness. And that's when a big old football player, he weighed about 300 pounds.
Well, what had happened to inspire this?
The students beat up a couple of cadets.
So 300
yep.
came?
At least 300. So they went up there, and this big old football player, well, I tell you, he weighed about 300 pounds. He got up on the rail on the back porch, jumped off on and knocked about five of them down at one time. So we finally got it straightened out, the police, myself. A couple of policemen got pushed around a little bit, but they got it calmed down.
Amazing. Amazing.
I knew exactly where they were going. Because I heard a little, and I got a little inkling about him beating up a cadet up there or something. Because he wouldn't leave.
Now, I've heard other stories, but I expect they were before your time, about W&L students stealing cannons?
Oh, it wasn't W&L. It was, that's back when I was a policeman. A bunch of high school kids did it. And the football coach at the VMI at that time was named Pooley Hubert.
Pooley?
Hubert.
Hubert, okay.
And he had a son in high school who was a pretty good athlete. So he and four or five boys, went down to VMI and took one of those cannons right there beside Jackson's statue. Rolled it down through there. I don't know what time he took it. Rolled it down and put it in the chapel parking lot. Well, the cadets found out about it. They thought students did it. And I was uptown by myself. And about 700 of those cadets come off that hill and went down there, and they run everybody out of the Beta house and all those houses down there, even upset the house mother's bed and throwed some of the food out of the back door. And got those students out there and made them take that cannon back up to VMI where it belonged, and the high school kids did.
Oh my God.
Didn't take me long to find out who did it, but they did. They're the ones that did it.
You know, I had heard that, and the guy had told me he was one of those betas that got thrown out of his bed. And he told me high school's kids had done it, but I didn't believe him.
They did.
They really did.
They did. Was that alumna she's talking to?
Yeah, he remembered it real clearly because he had a broken leg.
Yeah, they threw up Jack down there. But after they got the cannon back, it calmed down. But that's the one that, no, I don't know if they're still doing it now, but every Sunday morning those cadets would march down the hill to go to church. The babies, people I have drunks set up on a wall, you know, ragging them. And they broke ranks down there one day and went after them again. Those students are asking for it.
So do the babies have a special relationship with BMI?
I guess so. I used to have more trouble with them, especially old Sweetbriar. They'd go over there and in round town, you know, on these scavenger hunts. They used to send them on scavenger hunts. And they'd go over to VMI. I mean, not VMI, it was Sweetbriar, and take a bunch of stuff. And I don't know, I just caught on to it. I found out that what was happening. They would debate us. So I would go down and get the stuff. And if they broke that up, I found out how much it cost to replace it. So I'd get all the money and stuff that didn't break up and the money to take care of it and return it or have somebody come up and get it. And so every time anything like that happened, all this was just to go to the bait house, I knew where it was. And the other thing, the five caps used to do years and years ago, when the pledge week, we'd go down and steal one of the upperclassmen's cars and bring it up in right in front of the chapel door, right next to the front of the chapel door. Jack it up on cinder blocks, take all four wheels off and leave it sitting there. So it didn't take me long to find out who was doing that. So every time it happened, I just called in fire cap house to come up and get that car.
So did each fraternity have certain things that they did?
Well, they did all kinds of things. They used to come up to my house and want something belong to me. They used to, Phi Delts used to have a old fella who used to sell the grit. They called him the quarter man. He was always wanting a quarter. So after he died, they buried him out here at this Ebenezer Church. So the next class would come along, they want to know where the quarter man was buried. They come up to my house to find out. They come to my house to make shortcuts and try to find what they was looking for. And so I tell them, where he was buried. They go out there and find out about it and then come back. And he used to call me anytime to help him with find something.
Well, I'm doing the same thing. I'm going to ask you about the puppy man. Did you know the puppy man? There's some guy who used to sell puppies.
Oh, Herb Lindsay.
Yeah, Herb the puppy man. Is that what he was called?
Yeah. I was young and when he was living, he'd sell his dogs to people, kids, students, anybody. And they always had some name for somebody. So you've been talking to alumni about trying to find out some things, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I always consider myself pretty lucky to get along with them the way I did. Because they knew I wasn't trying to take advantage of them.
Well, it's mutual. They have a lot of respect for you.
Yeah, I know.
Your name comes up a lot, whether I ask or not.
Yeah, before one of the board of trustees retired, he had some minutes put in the logs about me in the school annuals thing, whatever they do. I appreciated that.
Well, I think you've earned whatever honors you've gotten.
Well, I tried.
Well, I want to thank you. This has really been a pleasure. We've
been talking a good little while, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. And you've given me some really terrific material here. I thank you.
You're welcome.
If you think of anything else, you give me a call and we'll do it again. Or I'll come out to Maple Lane.
Yeah, we I don't know anything that comes to me right now. So we, trying to think. There's so much happening in my time, I just can't remember it all. I remember writing more quite much of it, didn't I?
You did pretty well. You remembered more than most, but then you put in more time than most here, too.
Yeah, it was most every day. Just an ordinary day, I was up 16, 17, 18 hours a day.
And I think I'm doing something special when I stay to 6:30. Thank you, Murph.
Okay.
Okay, we got one more story here.
This young man had taken one. He belonged across the street in Gillum Dormitory, and this other student lived in Gaines, not Gaines, or Ram Lee. And he told me one day he was missing a check. And so I finally found out about it and got the check back for $100. And I got to check quite a few handwriting specimens of kids in his section. Didn't compare anything. So I asked him, I said, you have any visitors from in the rest of the dormitory besides your people in this hall? And he said, yeah, kid across the street. So I found out who he was. I got to checking around his handwriting. I noticed a whole lot of similarity in the way he made his sixes, his fours, his ones, his threes, and the way he made his E's and his check. And so I got enough information together to send off to this man and came back. Called me, he was out of town. He called me away from Midwest somewhere. He says, you're on the right track. But he says, I'm out of town right now. He says, you're on the right track. We'll just get this man, this person to write you a couple of checks. So we called him in my office and he did it. Of course, he tried to disguise it. So I sent him off to the man. He come, he sent back information 4 or 5 days later. Said, he's your man. So I reported to the EC committee and they took him up. And during the hearing down there, they had a law student representing him. And he asked me, he says, Murph, how come you picked this person of all the other people around? I said, simple way he made his ones, his twos, his threes, his E's, his regular handwriting. And Kenton Hall told, I'd been in this type of work pretty close to 40 years. So he asked me, he said, Murph, are you an expert in this handwriting? I said, no, I'm no expert. But I said, I'll tell you, I've been doing this kind of stuff for 40 years. And I said, I think I know what I'm talking about. He shut up. And I found him guilty. And so that was it.
You do have your tricks.
Well, it's like setting traps, but you got, sometimes you have to set a trap to catch something. I used to have an old boy worked over in the gymnasium. He was local. He worked on the TEP program and brought him in there. And he kept on. So we got the missing wristwatches and the money. And so, and I noticed he was going across the bridge over at those people over, they'd go over sometime when he wasn't busy and they'd play cards and gamble a little bit. So I know, I found out he'd spend a lot of money over there. So I said, I'm gonna catch him. So I took off a pair of pants and shoes and shirt and billfold and put it, you know, on a bench and lock on. I got in the shower room where he couldn't see me, but I could see him through a mirror. So About time for him to go to lunch here, he come down through, looking around, and I spotted him. He come along, reached down, got that bill for him, and he started at that side door where the girls come out of now. And by the time he reached out, started at the door, I reached out and grabbed him to see the pants and pulled him back. And took him on upstairs, and Coach Miller was up there at that time. I pulled the billfold out of his pocket and showed him what I did. And so he got rid of it. He told him to get off the campus. And so that afternoon, later on that afternoon, he'd called the TAP program, told him what happened. So this was a young black fellow in charge of the TAP program. He called Coach Bell and told him, says, "You can't fire him, he works for us." Dick says, "Like hell I can't." He said, "We don't want him around here anymore." So that was it. My first year or so I worked there. In the old gym, we didn't have the new part of that gym. It was mainly university kids and Lexington kids. The first year I worked there, I caught 20-some of them coming in to steal money and billfolds and watches. And I finally asked one of them from the university, I said, "Who told you to come over here and steal stuff?" He said, "Well, they told us it's easy over here." I said, "You found out, didn't you?" So, didn't have any more problem with that.
Well, it's certainly one of the things I enjoy most about working here is having the feeling that I'm safe,
yeah,
and that I don't need to worry about things. When I have friends come visit from the big city.
I'm going to get in there before I get a ticket on my car.
Oh, my
Arizona.
Goodness. I don't want you getting a ticket. Thank you, Murray.
I want to